Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 51. In this episode, I'll discuss an article recommending DDAVP for intracranial hemorrhage from antiplatelet agents, answer the drug information question, what should I use to treat a DVT in a patient on CRRT with a recent history of HIT, and share a resource I use to get an early clue on the identification of organisms in cultures. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode51. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. If you are already in the Pharmacy Nation Slack group, make sure you have downloaded the Slack app from the App Store on your phone or tablet. Installing the mobile app for Slack is what enables real-time messaging with other pharmacists. If you're not already in the Pharmacy Nation group, why not? It's free. You can sign up at pharmacynation.org or email me, joe@pharmacyjoe.com, if you need help. The article I'm discussing today is titled Guideline for Reversal of Antithrombotics in Intracranial Hemorrhage, a Statement for Healthcare Professionals from the Neurocritical Care Society and Society of Critical Care Medicine. The lead author is Jennifer A. Frontera, and this was published in the journal Neurocritical Care in December 2015. The article provides a comprehensive review of the available reversal strategies for intracranial hemorrhage due to antithrombotics. In this episode, I'll highlight the article's recommendations on when to give desmopressin or DDAVP for intracranial hemorrhage. Desmopressin is an analog of vasopressin, but has very little vasopressor activity. Desmopressin causes the release of von Willebrand factor and increases platelet adhesion. In uremic patients, desmopressin normalizes hemostasis and reduces bleeding time. In uremic patients exposed to aspirin, desmopressin has been found to improve platelet function. Desmopressin has also been shown to significantly reduce blood loss and improve thrombus formation in cardiac surgery patients exposed to aspirin preoperatively. Desmopressin for antiplatelet reversal in intracranial hemorrhage has been reported in a handful of studies, usually at a dose of 0.4 micrograms per kilogram IV. It appears desmopressin can stabilize platelet function, but the duration of effect is influenced by the amount and frequency of antiplatelet dosing, and repeat dosing of desmopressin may be required in some patients. Side effects of desmopressin are considered mild, include facial flushing, edema, fluid overload, and hyponatremia. Rarely, cerebrovascular or cardiac thrombosis has been reported. Because of the low risk of serious side effects, the relatively low cost, and the suggestion of benefit, the authors of these guidelines state, we suggest consideration of a single dose of desmopressin in intracranial hemorrhage, 0.4 micrograms per kilogram IV, associated with aspirin, COX-1 inhibitors, or ADP receptor inhibitors. In patients deemed appropriate, such as those undergoing a neurosurgical procedure, desmopressin can be used in addition to platelet transfusion. This is a conditional recommendation based on low-quality evidence. The drug information question I'll be sharing on today's show is, what should I use to anticoagulate a patient on CRRT with a recent history of heparin-induced thrombocytopenia, or HIT. Pharmacy Joe is on number two. The first question is not the real question, is illustrated perfectly in this drug information question. Before I could give the provider an answer to this question, I had to ask them several questions. How long ago did the patient have HIT? Why and for how long do they need to be anticoagulated? The answer to the drug information question depends on patient-specific factors. A patient with a history of HIT within the past 3 months has a very high risk of fatal thrombosis if they are re-exposed to heparin. Patients who have a more remote history of HIT may tolerate heparin. Depending on the indication for use, the risk may be worth taking. HIT antibodies have two unique properties. The HIT antibody is temporary, with a median time to disappearance of 50 to 80 days. And patients with a prior history of HIT who are antibody negative have an amnestic immune response, meaning the patient is not sensitized and will need 4 days of re-exposure to heparin before possibly reacting again. Because of these unique properties, it may be possible to re-expose a patient with a previous history of HIT to heparin for 4 days without precipitating a second episode of acute HIT. There are no prospective clinical trials that evaluate this concept. Considering these unique properties of HIT antibodies in a risk-benefit analysis, the authors of the CHEST guidelines on the prevention and treatment of HIT, which I have linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode51, have the following recommendations. In patients with a history of HIT, in whom heparin antibodies have been shown to be absent, who require cardiac surgery, we suggest the use of heparin over non-heparin anticoagulants. In patients with a history of HIT, in whom heparin antibodies are still present, who require cardiac surgery, we suggest the use of non-heparin anticoagulants over heparin. In patients with a history of HIT, who require cardiac catheterization or PCI, the recommended treatment is bivalirudin or argatroban. And in patients with a past history of HIT who have acute thrombosis not related to HIT and normal renal function, we suggest the use of fondaparinux at full therapeutic doses until transition to warfarin can be achieved. Now, to answer the original question, the patient was on continuous renal replacement therapy, needed treatment for a DVT, and had HIT about 70 days ago. So I recommended using argatroban to bridge the patient to oral warfarin therapy. The resource for this episode is two charts from Wikipedia that illustrate the steps in the classification of gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria. Understanding the steps the laboratory takes to identify pathogens from cultures is occasionally useful to justify broadening or narrowing empiric antibiotic therapy before culture results are finalized. For example, if a patient has a gram-negative bacilli growing that is not fermenting lactose, which the lab can tell you before they've completely identified the pathogen, pseudomonal coverage should be considered until the culture results are finalized. I invite you to check out these two diagrams in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode50. Listeners can support the show when they shop using my Amazon link. It will cost you no extra money, and I will receive a small commission from Amazon. Just use my link, pharmacyjoe.com/shop, to take you to Amazon each time you shop. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.